You're listening to Big Cast, your source for financial technology innovation with John Best.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of the Big Cast. My name is John Best. I'm the CEO of, I'm the CEO of Best Innovation Group, www.big-fintech.com. And we like to talk about things here that affect credit unions and banks, and we really kind of try to explore the things that will affect your business. And I'm excited for the new year. I'm excited for 2020. I'm recording this in December right now, but I'm pretty sure it's going to come out in about mid-January. So we'll have all gone through our holiday season. Hopefully we had a great time. And I'm excited to start the year off right to talk a little bit about a good friend of mine, someone that I worked very closely with. And you know, once Big started, he had started his company around the same time. It's called Savvy Intel. He then worked with CMG, the CUNA Mutual Group, to create an even bigger portion of his vision. And now he's back and he's following what clearly is his passion. So I'd like to welcome Blessin Abraham to the show, CEO and founder of Cambio. Hey, Blessin.
Hey, John. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, man. So just to give the audience a little backstory, you and I, we've been working together a long time when you were at BCU, working in data there, and I was at WRG. And then we both kind of, had the kind of weird experience of starting a business at the same time in this space. And, we're working together on that. And now, just recently, there was a meeting out in Plano, Texas, with a couple, I believe it's a group called Venture Tech. They asked me to sit in to sort of help evaluate a lot of the fintechs that were there. And, I saw Blessin's name on the list. I immediately said yes. And I was able to see your really amazing presentation and kind of what you're doing. And I got to say, I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
It's a big risk to walk away from something as successful as Advantage was with CUNA Mutual Group and to follow your passion like this. So tell us just a little bit about that journey and talk to us about, so the audience knows what came, and I'm saying it right? Cambio?
Yeah, Cambio, you got it spot on. So
C-A-M-B-I-O, right?
Yeah. So, and our website is a little bit different, but it's cambiomoney.com. We just started in May of this past year, John, but just to take another step back to, like you said, you and I have a long history together, right? Mm-hmm. When you were at WRG, we were working together with the Baxter rollout of Target Credit Union. We put together an iPad application. I believe it was 2011.
Yeah.
So back in the day, right? When iPads are still fairly new to change around the onboarding process for new members. So doing innovative pieces back then to change around the process and the experience, the member experience then. At that point, I always knew I wanted to start my own business. And I, like you said, we both started, our individual companies and got together, you with Big and myself with Savvy Intel in 2014 and started chatting. And I know we had a couple of collaborative projects that we worked together there, and an opportunity came up in 2017 to be acquired by CUNA Mutual Group, and we pressed forward with that. I really did realize pretty quickly that I'm just purely an entrepreneur at heart, and had really good support from the leadership team at CUNA Mutual Group and Advantage to pursue this opportunity. And in 2019, I left Advantage to start Cambio, and really the backstory behind this was, our goal is to help the underserved. So we're a banking platform that is designed to specifically target and go after the unbanked and underbanked consumers. And the story actually started where one day I was in an Uber and the driver had NPR on, and they were talking about how in the state of Illinois, where I'm located, that the lobbying firms for check cashers and payday lenders were lobbying the state to increase the fees to charge people to cash payroll checks and government issued checks, right? And I remember saying this out loud. I said, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And threw you out of the car?
No, I mean, it was funny, right? Because the Uber driver is in there chuckling too. And
so
I'm
he
like,
agreed with you. Okay, I wasn't sure. You never know. You never know.
Yeah, and the funny part of it was, it wasn't even like I meant to say it out loud. I think I just said it out loud without even thinking about it, right?
Right.
And so that's where the obsession really started. I always knew my next venture, I wanted to have some sort of socioeconomic impact. Like I said, my entire background is in the credit union space, financial services space, data and analytics. So this started to fit into what I was really looking into. And so with Cambio, what we started to do was really evaluate what are the avenues that are out there today? And today, you know, for the underserved consumer, there's a number
let's
of...
Let's take a step back. Let's define the underserved consumer, because I think that's a starting point for everyone, because I think there's a wide spectrum of what that definition is. I thought you did a good job of sort of defining that at the Venture Tech.
Yeah. So the underserved, thank you, Blue, making sure that we understand that. The underserved are a combination of people that are considered unbanked and underbanked. And, you know, typically, and I'll raise my hand on this before I really got into this. I always thought the underserved meant that, you know, they lived in certain parts of a city or a town. Or
they lived under a bridge with a cardboard box.
They have a certain income level. And that's really not the case at all.
Right.
The underserved means that their banking services that are offered today don't fit the needs of the individual.
Or they're just not able to get it, right?
They're not able to get it. And there's banking deserts everywhere, right? Much like food deserts. So it's a matter of, you know, if you look at the numbers, there's 65 million Americans that fit this criteria. So 1 in 4 Americans that fit this criteria. The other thing that happens with these consumers too is they fit another category. So they fit another category called the credit invisible. So these are folks that have no credit score or are subprime credit score individuals. And they spend combined $115 billion just on fees and interest. And the amazing thing with it is $17 billion is just spent on deposits and payments. So these are people that are going to check cashers to go ahead and cash their paychecks, get access to cashier's checks to pay their bills, get access to prepaid debit cards to pay their debit cards.
Well, I remember at when I was at WRG, you know, I was also the senior vice president of Westcom itself.
Yep.
And one of Darren Williams, who was a genius for this stuff, and Rob Guilford, you know, bless his soul, when he was alive, they actually bought an entire check cashing company because they realized that you had these credit union folks who were not credit union folks, but they had these people who only made $400 a month who were trying to send money home. And they'd have to go to this check cashing place to check and lose like $25 just cashing it. And then to send like $100 home, it would cost them $25.
Yep. And these people are paying, you know, 5 to 10%. And John, your example is perfect, right? It's 5 to 10% of my paycheck goes towards banking. So just think about that for 1 second. Today in credit union land, right, we're in a deposit war. And credit unions are paying high interest rates to attract deposits in the door. So your credit unions are paying people. These are folks that are actually paying to access banking. Right.
They're paying 5%. Like, it's a peanut, as I like to say, a peanut butter and chocolate moment.
Yep. It really is. And it's a sad situation for a lot of these folks. Again, going back to the fact that the banking services may not necessarily fit, or they're not able to access some of these services. And it's no criticism, by the way, to any credit unions, because if you think about it, right, most credit unions, we were built off the idea of, and I'll go back to the old piece that we have, people helping people. But I think the fact is, when you start to grow as a credit union, you do have to focus in on where you can actually make some of your revenue, right? And you still have a membership base that you have to help. So you can't abandon them and all of a sudden say, hey, you know what, we're going to go ahead and shift our strategy and focus our attention on now the underserved. It's just not possible to do it.
I think, too, that... you know, the Grayans have always tried to do this. I mean, case in point in what I just discussed with Westcom. The challenge is it's been a moving target. And post 2008, it became an even bigger moving target. And now one of the things I've seen is with the expansion, and your story about the Uber driver is a great point, with the expansion of what I'll call the gig economy, it's actually even more pronounced. And it's that's why I wanted to define the underserved, because I think that's widened. And it's a bigger, more expansive target than it used to be, which I don't know that our Korean space really has kept, you know, it's difficult to keep up with that demographic and try to understand how to serve them, I think.
Yeah, and I'll even expand that further too, right? If we were to think about the folks that are part of the gig economy, the folks that fit this underserved community, is if you look at the underserved, those 65 million Americans, half the people of those 65 million Americans are between the ages of 18 to 45 years old. So these are folks that are in their prime credit building, credit utilization years that can't access certain pieces in the banking world, right? If you look at it, 80% own a smartphone. And the other part of it too is that of the 18 to 45 year olds, half earn more than 30K. So that just goes back to the idea of, again, this piece around who do we think the underserved are. Again, they don't live in just a certain neighborhood. They don't make a certain amount. It's a vast variety of different people. But the point here is that a big portion of them are actually fitting a demographic that credit unions want to go after. The challenge gets into is, does it make sense for credit unions to go after? And I say, yes, it does, but it's also challenging when you've got competing priorities, right? And I say that in not in a negative way, but just saying that it's tough to go ahead and say that you're a SEG-based credit union, and all of a sudden you're going to go and shift your focus to a different area, right? And you're going to now start to offer another product, because that's what credit unions want to do, right? Is offer another checking product or another savings product, right? Add on to the suite of products that you offer. But the reality is there needs to be a catered set of services that are built for this. And you're spot on too, John. One more comment about going back to the 2008, you know, economic downturn that happened. There was a number of bills that were introduced to regulate the banking industry with the hope that it was actually going to go ahead and specifically the big banks ensure that they go ahead and help these underserved folks and manage some of these underserved folks. And it really did the complete opposite in a lot of ways. Right. I mean, banks decided to go ahead and say, OK, we need to figure out ways to go ahead and make money. So
look at Wells Fargo. I mean,
case in point. Yeah. And they introduced different fees. Right.
They introduced different fees. They introduced predatory business practices, giving people credit cards and debit cards they didn't ask for. I mean, it was a mess. It continues to be a mess, you know, and what it does, I believe, is it turns off a consumer to these banking services, to where they either think they're out of reach for them or too complex or that it's not safe, you know?
Yep. And it's spot on, right? Those are the people that end up getting pushed out. But then as a movement, if we were to just focus in on the credit union movement in general, there are challenges for us to be able to go after those individuals, right? Like, there's number one, charter restrictions that we have. You know, not everybody can go out and attract people across this across the U.S., or they may even have community restrictions, right? They want to be able to go after. Number two is the regulatory constraints that kind of come in. You know, I've talked to a number of CEOs of credit unions that have said, hey, we want to play a bigger factor into CDFI, for example. But our challenge gets into, we can only lend out so much before regulators get after us or the auditors get after us on how much we're lending out to a certain segment of credit score folks or population of folks too. So it's a combination of things that really play out in this.
So you thought about all this.
Yep.
And you said to yourself, okay, you're listening into the back of the Uber and you have this light bulb moment. And so you start Cambio and you think to yourself, okay, I could help solve this charter problem. I can help solve this regulatory problem. And I could be the bridge between Cambio can be the bridge between these underserved folks and the credit union industry. And so you go, hey, I love you guys at CFG. I know you guys parted ways on great circumstances and they appreciate all you did for them. But I'm going to go chase this and this is a passion for me. And here we are. So tell me how you solved, how did you either lessen or solve these two problems? You know, how does Cambio do that?
Yeah. So first off, you reeled off a couple of challenges that I'm sure a lot of our friends in the credit union space or banking space would laugh at me for saying, hey, you know what, how are you going to go ahead and solve the charter problem, right? So our biggest thing, and I go back to this, is if you look at the solutions that are out there to help the underserved population today, a lot of it is on the lending side. And there's some great organizations doing great work to go ahead and say, hey, how do we go ahead and help people break away from predatory lending? From utilizing payday loans. But I saw the challenge was still on that banking side, like you said. So what we've actually done is we're actually partnering with the Illinois Credit Union League and the LSC Service Corp to go ahead and put out a debit card where we're able to go ahead and go out to anybody in the U.S. Through a national charter that they have and be able to go and provide our prepaid card, which serves as more as a, we'll call it a blanket checking account, so that folks can go out and utilize. And I just want to make something very, very clear. We're not trying to go out. Cambio is not trying to go out and compete in any way, shape, or form as a deposit product or anything like that. We're just trying to go ahead and fix the area where we can attract people to go ahead and use our services. So we've got a debit card that folks can actually utilize. It'll be branded as Cambio. Folks will be able to go ahead and access ATMs. They'll be able to go ahead and go and do direct deposit. They'll be able to utilize remote check capture.
To be able to get out of the parking lot at DIA because they don't take cash, and the cashiers all leave when it's under, you know, 20 degrees.
Well, and the other side too that's big is if you are one of these people that is a service worker or receives cash, is, you know, with our partnership with the Illinois Credit Union League, is folks can actually go to a Walgreens, a 7-Eleven, a Speedway, and actually deposit cash into their card.
Wow.
So that's another big plus too. So now what we've done is we've removed that barrier from an access perspective, right? We're giving basic levels of banking services to these individuals. And what we really wanted to do was address and see, okay, what are the common issues that the underserved folks are actually dealing with? So we got a small user group together and started.
You can't even buy anything online if you're cash only.
No.
I'm just coming around back to the barrier. That's, you know, that's what I was struck by in your presentation was, like, my son wanted to get, he didn't want to get a bank account. He wanted a piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the end game. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's, you know, when it used to be when you and I were kids that, like, we would have, you know, the moment we could get our license, we were down at the DMV. But yep. really what we wanted was the car, not the driver's license. It was a means to an end. But, you know, you can't even have an Amazon account if you don't have, you may pay cash for your apartment, you may pay cash for utilities, you can get cashier's checks, all these things. But there's all these other services. They're now so digitally, there's so many digital lifestyle platforms that the only way that you're going to use them is card on file.
Well,
but you're opening up for them.
And the other thing too, is you know this better than I do too, is there are actual states going out there and making regulations so that they can prevent restaurants from purely becoming cashless. You know, they're preventing Amazon, like in New York, they passed a law that restaurants cannot be purely cashless, right? Because it was going to segment out an entire group of people from being able to go in and use that restaurant. McDonald's is actually struggling with this today, where they're introducing the kiosks, you know, to go out and place your orders, but they're card only, right? And so they still have to keep a cashier station because there's still folks that are still paying in cash. And there's, in fact, 14 million Americans that are still dependent on cash only. So
it's expensive to have, like, I checked out, we have a Kroger, I think it's Kroger based grocery store called King Supers here. Mm-hmm. And I checked out of the self-service because it was the only thing open at 6 a.m. when I was rolling through there. And I just happened to have a $100 bill on me. I was like, I'll just use this.
Yep.
And you could pay with cash, but you could see that that's much more expensive because then you got to populate it with cash. You have all the problems that we have with ATMs. When I say we, I mean the financial business.
Yep.
So question on this basic level of banking, is that an interest-bearing account yet, or is that where you're headed to get them into the credit union space?
No, so yeah, that's where we're headed, but today it's not an interest-bearing account. But what we do to supplement the interest-bearing piece is we really try to drive the behavior of these individuals to a positive spending financial habits area. So that's where really with Cambio, and I forgot to mention this at the open too, is Cambio means change in Spanish and a couple of other languages too. And that's what we're trying to do is change the behaviors of consumers so that they break the vicious cycle of relying on payday lenders, relying on check cashers to do all of their banking, and get them into a financially stable position to actually, you know, utilize some traditional channels, right? So what we do is we say within Cambio, we will reward you for positive behaviors. So traditional rewards programs are primarily focused in on, hey, for every dollar you spend, you get a point or multiple points. What we're saying is make sure you pay your electric, your gas, your rent, your cell phone, the critical functions of your life from a finance perspective in a timely manner, and we will go ahead and actually give you rewards points based off of that. You know, going out and buying Dunkin' Donuts or going to Best Buy, as you know, as we're passing through this holiday season and spending frivolously on discretionary spend that goes outside.
Wait, back up. No, going to Best Buy is not frivolously payment.
Oh, that's why I wanted to glance over that with you because I know that's an essential spend for you, John.
Yeah, that's gonna be stricken from this podcast.
It's very true. I apologize.
My wife may listen to this and Dad, we're not having that. But so I get your point. So I get these rewards for positive behavior. So you're using some sort of AI to look at their account and the spending.
Yep.
So what can I do with the positive? What can I do with these rewards? Am I saving up for a riding lawnmower? What's the path on the rewards?
Yeah. So the pathway on the rewards is we're actually developing a secured credit cards program as a result of that. So again, if we remember back to the metrics that I told you guys or told everyone about is, you know, there's 90 million Americans that fit this criteria being credit invisible. And those 65 million Americans that I said that were underserved fit that criteria, right? I know a lot of numbers that I'm throwing out there. But one of their challenges is actually building their actual credit history.
That's right. Yeah, that's their. Well, and the 2008 really caused a disruption in our standard credit policies. Because I believe, based on the data that I've done research on, that there are two 640s. Mm-hmm. There's a 640 who is what I'll call a genuine 640, someone who is still learning their finances and struggling with payments and maybe has overcommitted themselves and missed, you know, it's the person who has 330 days and 260 days on the trades. Yep. And it's enough to put them at that 640. Yep. But then there's someone who went through a hardship, yep, who always paid their bills, hit this bump in the road, got over it, yep, and now is trying to climb out. But yep, the credit platform doesn't take that into account, and they have to wait years before any of this falls off their credit. And in the meantime, it's impacting their ability to climb out. It's sort of a catch 22.
Well, and to your point there too is, I mean, let's take that scenario where I am an individual, and I shared this story a little bit, right, with when we were back in Dallas, is in my open, is, you know, there are individuals that unfortunately, whatever the reason is, have caused a loss to a financial institution. Let's say it's a credit union, right? Within that credit union, there are bylaws that, for the protection of the institution,
sure,
they have to follow. Yeah, and so they have to, unfortunately, remove that member from accessing the services at that credit union, right? They have to close out that account. And the challenge for that individual goes into, you know, there's multiple different systems that now prevent you from being able to go ahead and access other banking accounts now if I'm that individual. And I'm not trying to demonize something like check systems, you know, that rates risk of an account.
No, not at all. But but there are protections in place, but those protections aren't taking into account this new, it was built at a time where there were certain situations.
Yep.
And, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you go back to 1937, you know, when we had the Great Depression and the banking, you know, Black Friday or whatever it was called, the banking issue, yep, where, you know, my grandmother told me a great story where, you know, she had $10,000 in the bank, and then FDR closed down the banks, and mm-hmm, and then when they reopened, she had $5,000.
Yeah,
and that was just the way it was. There was just life. It had to be spread across everybody. This is what you get. It was the, you know, the New Deal, this whole thing.
Yep.
But imagine post that, what her credit looks like if that was collateral for something,
yeah,
you know, if that was just, you know, used as collateral in a home or something else. And so they had to rethink that. They created FDIC, they created all these other things, but there hasn't really been much that's been created in the wake of the 2008 disaster to help the people that sort of went through that, right?
Yep. And it just continues on, right? And then once you enter that point where you can't access banking, you can't access credit, like you were saying, you enter this vicious cycle. And what do? You turn towards the other only alternative that's out there. And I know, again, that, you know, when we think about payday lenders, we think about check cashers, we think about the negative, but they are providing a service to a group of people that this is their only alternative. And that's right, why they're known as alternative financial service providers. And so what we're trying to do with that is to go ahead and fill that gap for credit unions. And being able to bring these folks that are underserved, that need access to service, that need a way to go ahead and build up their credit. So we're using banking to build up those credits, right? So use rewards, get access to a secured credit card. So as an example, get 500 points, earn 500 points off of your banking behaviors, those positive behaviors, complete some financial wellness tasks, complete some challenges that we put in front of you. And you can get access to, a simple example, $50 secured credit card. That's going to help you build up credit. Now use that for a few months. What we want to be able to do, and this is where working with credit unions is so instrumental for us, is we want to develop a partnership with a series of credit union, a number of credit unions, to go out and say, okay, we've got a group of consumers, members that are with us now that performed, or their credit score, their traditional credit score shows that they started off at a 575. We were able to bring them to that fringe point, John, of 640, right? And we've got now a history, 6 to 9 months of history, to show that even though they're at a 640, they actually perform like a 725 credit score person using some alternative data points, primarily using that the transaction data and combining that with some other third-party data to show that they actually perform like a, you know, like that 700 plus credit score individual. Now, you know, John Best and Blessing Abraham are in the market for XYZ loan. Do you want to go ahead and provide them a loan? So think of us as almost like a minor league system where we're bringing these folks to the major leagues, right? If I were to use the baseball analogy.
Sure. So first of all, I believe we talked about this at the VentureTech, but you're aware of CUDA's Open Your Eyes, Open Your Eyes initiative, which is, a national initiative to bring more to bring more awareness of the credit union industry to the average consumer. To me, this seems like a punchline to that to some extent. It's really credit unions right now hold somewhere between 6 to 8% of the total market. The numbers you just gave, one in four people, 65 million people, that would drive the GDP up because 65 million is, at last census in 2013 is it's exactly what you have here, a quarter of the above 18 adults, at least at that time. And so a quarter is a lot better than 6%, right?
Yep.
Of the total market. But just a couple questions on that. So I like the idea. So first of all, how do I find you? So how are you going to market? Because it seems to me one of the big things here is, man, you're headed out into some, we're friends, buddy. And we've been down this road. We always loved that we had these cranes to work with that we could market to. But you're going out into the big wide world to market directly to the average person, like competing with the Facebooks and everybody else. Not that, that's not a they're not your direct competitor, but you know where I'm going. You must have an incredible marketing plan and things because you're going to be out there trying to raise this awareness across the entire U.S. population based on the way you're saying it.
Yeah. So our plan with it, and I'm glad that you brought up the Open Your Eyes, right? I think there's a big piece with this. And I know we chatted a little bit about this during that conference is the advocacy side of this is pretty big. And we can obviously come back around to that. Mm. But to answer your question around marketing, really right now, our focus is we've seen this from our small user group, our small test user group that we've been working with that have been all underserved. There's a big viral play with this because how do I learn about going and using a check cashier, right? I learn from a family or a friend. And so we think there's a big, big component with that. But putting that aside, the way that we're approaching it today is we're actually going and working with some community organizations. We're working with some highly dense, underserved towns and cities here in Illinois today to go out and actually work with their actual elected officials to actually figure out how we want to go and spread the word. So that's kind of the initial play that we're going into with this, but that's not the broad way that we want to go about it, right? The broad way we want to reach this is, I go back to that 65 million Americans, 15 million are unbanked, 50 million are considered underbanked. So they have a relationship with a financial institution in some way, shape, or form. They just choose not to use that banking service. So I may be a member that did get an account at a credit union. I applied for a loan and I was a 575 credit score person. I did not get approved for that loan. So what do? I go into dormancy, I go into escheatment, and my account gets closed eventually, right? I don't have a relationship with you. I end up still using a check cashier. I still end up using a payday lender as my primary financial institution. So we see an opportunity to even partner with credit unions and financial institutions to say, hey, if you've got people that you are sending into financial counseling or financial coaching or that have been rejected from a membership from you, send them over to us. Be the referral engine for us, and we can set up a partnership together where it's beneficial so that when this person does become credit worthy, we can ensure that you get a first right of refusal of a loan, right? So that's why I go back to that minor league system analysis or the analogy that I use with baseball is let us be that minor league. Let's get these people ready so that when they're ready for the major leagues, they're there for you and you're not losing touch base with these people that you've actually brought on board.
Yeah. So, and that we used to have things like that with the car lending, I remember, where subprime car lending, which I'm sure, like, as soon as I said that, like a whole bunch of people, like the hair on their arms went up. I probably shouldn't equate it with that, but this is something I think is sorely needed. So tell me where you are in the process. You know, you just started in May. You were out at VentureTech. You had a credible demo, I thought. And you, as always, your stuff is beautiful. It's very consumer friendly, the UX, the design. But how are you, you know, how do you progress in the, well, here we are in December, you're getting ready for a big 2020. What you looking at?
Yeah, so what we're looking at is we did just launch the app onto the Android marketplace. It's right now in an invite only. So the next steps for us.
Of course, I get an invite, right?
You get an invite. Of course, John Best always. Well,
I'm under that score. So let's do all my Best Buy purchases.
I was about to say, go to Best Buy a little bit more and you'll definitely monitor that criteria, right? Yeah. So we will be launching into the iOS marketplace. But, you know, going into this year, our 2020, we're really focusing our attention on the user acquisition piece, building out our stack. So we are looking for credit union partners to work with on setting up that lending criteria, setting up that piece so that we can set up a pathway towards people to be able to work with your institution. So we're open to talking to financial institutions around that, understanding that one of the key things that I really try to do with when we set up Cambio was to focus in on the consumer, right? Focus in on that member that we're bringing in and making sure that we're solving for their challenges. So now the next step is, as we're progressing through that, is to make sure that, you know, with the partnerships that we want to set up with credit unions, making sure that we set up some integration channels there to make sure that we've got a smooth pathway to get loans funded, get some of those pieces funded. We're also going down the path of raising some funds around this too. And I'll kind of finish this part of the conversation with this is, you know, you and I spoke a little bit about this is, this plays perfectly into what credit unions need to be doing. It goes back to the old picture of the gentleman walking in the rain with the umbrella.
I have a bank that I got from Suncoast that has that. Yeah.
So, funny. And it protects you, right?
For people that don't know, it's an old symbol of the credit union industry. Yep. And I will post a picture of my bank with this podcast, so you'd be able to
perfect
see it on
there,
the big
desktop. There we go.
So I'm literally looking at it right here. So
yeah, and that works out perfectly, right? And the reason why I mentioned that is it goes back to the heart of what credit unions are trying to do, right? Is we're people helping people. It addresses people that are really facing hardships in multiple different ways where they don't have access to services. And the other reality is this too, and I shared this during the demo or the presentation that I did a few weeks ago in Dallas, was there's a very large VC firm called A16Z. And one of their managing partners at a Forbes 30 Under 30 made a statement around the underserved. And she said that the underserved is the next $1 trillion idea for fintechs. So what I'm trying to do here too is let people know, and this piece of that commentary was done in October. This right. means that this space is only going to get bigger, yeah. meaning from a fintech perspective. And I think credit unions have an opportunity to go ahead and do this the right way to help out these folks. And there's going to be a number of fintechs. There's going to be a number of organizations that jump into this space to try to attract these consumers. And, you know, as you know, the economy is a, you know, wild swing up and down. And, you know, we're right now in an uptick. We'll eventually go down a little bit. And there's going to be more people that are going to be in need of help with this. And I feel like we have an opportunity to, in partnership with credit unions, to step ahead of this and be that conduit, be that individual offering to folks that are in need of this, yeah. and step ahead of these fintechs. And so this is an opportunity to partner with a fintech, us, Cambio, to really address this problem.
So you're saying, hey, while certainly there's an altruistic perspective to this, and certainly that's your passion, you know, there's also a huge business upside to this. And it's going to happen whether you do it or the creatives do it or somebody else does it. And since it's really ticks all the boxes for Cradian space, it seems like, and thus your partnership with the Illinois Cradian League, seems like a tremendous opportunity. And I applaud you for taking that risk, man, for getting out there and doing it. So real quick, if I'm listening to this and I'm a credit union CEO or I'm another fintech that I feel like I could work with you or help, how do they find you? How do they get in contact if they're saying, hey, I want to be one of those guys you work with in 2020? Where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah, so our website is www.cambiomoney.com. So it's CAMBIOmoney.com. Otherwise, you can always email me at babraham, ABRAHAM, at cambiomoney.com. And one more comment too, John, that I would make is, again, you and I chatted a little bit about this in a number of conversations now, is the advocacy side, right? And you brought this up with the Open Your Eyes initiative that credit unions are doing, but on the other side of it is the Independent Community Bankers Association that's going out and doing a new campaign around wake up. And the campaign is around taxation again. And you mentioned this. There's probably another
one. Open your eyes, wake up. I'm sensing a theme.
So they're going after us from a taxation perspective in the credit union space. And this goes towards, again, what do we stand for? What's the advocacy side? And this shows another symbol of what it is that we're trying to do. We're trying to address a problem for a set of folks. And I know credit unions, by the way, again, just to compliment it too, I know a number of credit unions have worked in this space, are doing work in this space,
sure,
are involved in the CDFI side of it. So I want to play kudos to them and not act like nothing's being done, but there's certainly an opportunity to continue to expand that out and to continue.
And I know those organizations, I know a lot of them that would welcome even more opportunity in this space. Yep. So if you're already there, there's that they all recognize the deep sea that it is and the work it's going to take, and they would welcome more technology, more opportunity to help these people. I know that for a fact.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being on. We'll make sure that www.cambiomoney.com is on the website, as well as babraham@cambiomoney.com. And blessing as always, it's a pleasure. And I look forward to chatting with you and learning more as you move along.
Yeah, absolutely. And can't wait till 2020 starts here and make it a great year. Thank you, John.
Got a question or want to join the conversation? We'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech. Email us at info@big-fintech.com. Or visit our show notes and comments at www.bigfintechmedia.com.